Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jake.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we're going to complete the original series of Planet of the Apes. Thank you, boyfriend Jesse.
Oh, man.
We're going to start with 1972's Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, directed by J. Lee Thompson. Now, he directed classics like The Guns of Navarone and the original Cape Fear, and he also directed horror movies like 1981's Happy Birthday to Me, a bunch of Charles Bronson movies including Death Wish 4, The Crackdown, St. Ives, 10 to Midnight, The Evil That Men Do, Murphy's Law, and Kinjite, Forbidden Subject, and also the Chuck Norris, Lou Gossett classic, Firewalker.
So horror movie makes sense because this was a straight up horror movie.
This is a low budget movie.
Yes.
Or at least it looked like a low budget movie.
Well, I actually have the breakdown of all five movies if you want right now.
Do the budgets get lower and lower every time?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Kind of. So Planet of the Apes, budget 5.8, gross 33.4. Beneath, 4.6 budget, 19 gross. Escape, 2 million, but gross 12. Conquest, 1.6, 8 million gross. Battle, 1.8, slightly higher than Conquest, and had the same gross.
Yeah, people were happy to see
they spent more money on Battle than on Conquest.
They did, but also it was, you know, maybe 6 months later, so who knows? And maybe Roddy McDowall wanted a bigger salary because it was the, I don't know.
They had to pay for Claude Akins and Paul Williams, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that was some, yeah. I tried to get boyfriend Jesse to record some notes, but he was having none of it because he doesn't really want the blame for this, so. Understandably, because I wouldn't want the blame either.
Well, let's start with Conquest. I guess our first reaction, Brother Jay?
This to me, was another bipolar movie. It really jumped. It really wanted to be two movies. The love story between Armando and Caesar, which were kind of the, you know, this makeshift adopted family. In that relationship. And then on the other side, the ape apocalypse uprising and the ending of the world as humanity knows it. And I think that if they had stuck with one of the stories greater than one of the other stories, it would be fine. But I think in this instance, they relied far too heavily on the uprising and war. But I realized that was feeding into the final movie. So there was some premeditation. I got tired of the violence and the elongated. There was too much of the combat and conflict that didn't need to be there. You didn't need to drag that drama out as long as you did. I understand it was commentary. A lot of this is related to the Vietnam War and nuclear testing and Hiroshima. So there is some not so hidden lessons that are trying to be taught in this script and the next script, more so in the next script. But that's where I had a problem. I really liked the first part, and I really, since we're gonna just go right, I'll just go
yeah,
right
that's
for
right.
it.
Yeah.
To me, one of the most amazing poignant parts of this movie is when Caesar discovers that Armando has been killed, and he finds the poster of the circus in the shop window, and he's crying. And that was palpable. To me, that was amazing acting in an ape suit by Roddy McDowall. You couldn't have done much better. That was probably, in my opinion, probably the best part of this movie. But unfortunately, there was just too much crazy around the rest of the movie. And it was goofy, campy at times. And then it was war and death. And it seemed to not have a... It just seemed out of place. It was too dichotomous. Either you have a war movie, which is a little serious about conflict and strife and uprising, but to throw in kind of the comedy with it, it took me out of the movie.
Drew?
I don't remember any comedy. I think this is a good movie. I did not enjoy it at all. I found the entire experience to be unpleasant and uncomfortable. But I think it was a good movie. I think they did a good job with an obviously very limited budget. It's a heavy, heavy story from where they started, and it continues this trend of sort of schizophrenic movies. Just every movie has such a different look and different tone. The plot carries through, but nothing else does. So that's a little jarring, but at the end of the day, I think Conquest might be the best movie of the five, I think.
Really? Interesting. I like that it continued the world building. Like, they don't... Okay, they have a problem with names. They changed Milo's name to Caesar. They keep having apes named Aldo who have nothing to do with that whole story that was told in the Escape movie where they talk about the one ape who rose up was named Aldo. Yeah, they abandoned that.
But they changed Milo's name because Milo's name may have been known, and so they had to change his name.
Yeah, maybe. But what about Aldo? Like, Aldo was supposed to be the big hero. Why don't they just change the name completely? I don't know.
You're really pulling semantics between this movie and the next movie. A lot of them learn speech. So
the next movie makes no sense.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, you're again, I think this is where you really have to suspend most skepticism because you have to.
Well, I was trying to excuse it in my head, and I was thinking, well, you know, in the Bible, a lot of people were named Paul and then changed their name to other... Well, no, never mind. But, yeah, I was reaching a little bit. This movie had a darker beginning. Like, the movie, one of the ideas that they first toyed with was Armando, Ricardo Montalban. By the way, the movie starts in 1983, which is just, 18 years after the end of Escape, where the little bitty baby of Cornelius and Zira is now a teenager or a young man. And it's still played by Roddy McDowall, and who is still the best ever in the ape makeup. The lady that was the
psychiatrist.
Well, she was a psychiatrist in the last movie, and in the in Beneath, she was one of the
mutants.
Yes. Now she plays Lisa, the love interest.
And later she's talking Lisa.
Well, that's anyway, we're going to get there. But
I'm talking Tina, and I'm going to kill you.
Originally, the script had, instead of Armando basically taking Milo on the road and basically disguising him in plain sight as an ape who can't talk, they originally had Armando disguising Caesar as his disfigured son. Like, he's not an ape, he's just a severely disfigured human. But they decided that wasn't going to be a good idea, which I think is a wise move. But yeah, the movie starts out where they go into town and they're putting up flyers and there's a lot of heavy exposition and the world has changed somewhat.
But it was 1991, by the way. 1983 was when the cats and dogs died.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I love the statue.
Yeah, I like that they felt free rein to change names and and alter that a little bit. But they doubled down on the fact that it was cats and dogs dying, which created a slave ape society.
Well, there's also a subplot where all the cats and dogs died because of a virus that came down from an astronaut. So
from outer space.
From outer space. Well, there was actually a subplot where Caesar was going to meet up with this astronaut who was distraught of the fact that he killed all the cats and dogs, and that was a whole thing. How can he live with himself taking the plague back to Earth? Anyway, so I love that. I love the fact that they kept that, as goofy as it sounds. Now, in practice, basically what we got, the humans in this movie, which I think is a good idea, the humans are bad guys. Straight up Nazis. In most cases, dressed like Nazis.
A lot of them, a lot of them are vacuous. There's a woman smoking at one point that says, you know, now that they won't kill me, I don't think I enjoy them at all.
Oh, humans are the worst.
But, interesting as of note, because I was watching all the special features. I just forgot his name. Who played the governor? He deliberately
Don Murray,
who is fluent in German,
yes,
translated all of his dialogue into German, so that when he would recite it back on this when filming, it would have the impact of being Germanic, so that it would have that more Nazi-esque feel to it.
Now, is he recognizable in the latest season of Twin Peaks?
I haven't gotten any further in Twin Peaks.
Oh, okay. He was also in Knots Landing.
He looks familiar to me. I've seen him in other things. But on the DVD with the special features, he was, you know, he's still around kicking, it looks like. So he seemed like a decent guy. I have lots of notes about the special features, though.
Okay.
I fundamentally don't understand the economics of this society.
Oh, me either.
There's a huge infrastructure in conditioning and controlling the apes as slave labor.
Yes.
I cannot wrap my head around how this is an economic benefit. This does not make any sense.
It's definitely, and this is kind of like a one-note science fiction presentation, because you're given the United States in 1991 or whatever, and it has totally changed. It's totally authoritarian, and maybe because I have spent most of my working life in communications of one sort or another, the fact that they repeated all these very simple things twice, humans talking to humans, I thought was pretty silly, but like in the public square. But yeah, there was this, all of the servant class were apes who could understand English and commands and could read or whatever, at least at a rudimentary level.
Do.
Yes, and there's a lot of no, like do, not do. Also, did you get the impression that the apes were being trained by Q from James Bond?
That's where the comedy of this kept cropping up.
I mean, there were so many.
I didn't think that was funny at all.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought it was the machete and this and I'm putting the knife in my pants. To me, I just had to laugh at that. So that from my perspective, maybe I had to laugh so I didn't turn it off. I don't know. I think the economic benefit is that they had slave labor that enabled them to not have to do crap. And so they could go and do leisurely things while they had domestic help doing things for free or for food, basically.
Well, so it's not an economic benefit. It's just a way to satiate the most horrible tendencies of the humans.
Yes.
Well, I think both. I think if you have somebody who can cook and clean for you, then you can go and maybe do some work on your job while you have somebody cooking, cleaning for you, and then you can come home and eat and go back and have your social life and not have to worry about any of those pesky things like responsibilities.
Yeah, but the only job, it seems, is controlling the apes.
Well, except that, remember, the movie is kind of small. I mean, it takes place mostly around ape control.
Yeah.
And so if you presume that maybe the working class people who you only see protesting the fact that the apes are taking their jobs, if you assume that there is some other place where everybody works and this is just like the leisure area, like maybe the upper class people that have all this slave labor,
my impression was that Ape Control was just an area and that the public didn't generally go there.
Yeah, I don't know. Because it was mostly just Nazis and apes.
Except for auctions.
That's it.
Well, auctions where we have Mr. Carlson from WKRP.
I know, Gordon Jump. And you have the governor sitting in the chairs from the spaceship in the first movie.
Oh, excellent. Well, okay, so in the first part of this is all exposition between Ricardo Montalban and Roddy McDowall. And I love Ricardo Montalban.
Yes.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
Yep. I was never sadder than when he jumped to his death in this movie.
Yes. Well, but, you know, he gives these, I mean, it's basically long scenes of exposition, but the fact that he's basically narrating it is really nice. It's soothing.
Yes. It made the master exposition palatable.
Yeah. And Roddy McDowall is just really good at acting in ape makeup. There's a lot of like stares and things, and okay, toward the end it got kind of over the top where he's just basically doing these like knowing stares, and by the 400th knowing stare you realize, you know, okay, come on. But have you guys, but just it's a slight tangent, have you guys seen like the 1930 something Dracula with Bela Lugosi?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not in some time.
Yeah, it is not a good movie. Huh. And Bela Lugosi's big thing, like the big scary thing, is he stares at you. It must have been very scary at the time, but in modern eyes, it's not a good movie.
I think I tried to watch it in the last 10 years or so, and it was, to me, if I'm thinking of the same movie, it was so terribly overacted I couldn't watch it. It was just terrible.
It's definitely like stage acted because it was a 1930s movie, but yeah. Yeah, it's almost, not quite, it's almost as bad as Bram Stoker's Dracula. Which I liked at the time, but does not hold up the test of time. Also, while we're talking about it, you know what else doesn't hold up the test of time? The TV show Different Strokes. They're playing it on
TV. Who would have thunk it?
Oh, it's just the worst.
Well, go back and watch Facts of Life.
Well, you know, I think the Facts of Life is actually better. It's not great, but, you know, you take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have.
Is there anybody left alive from
you have the Different Strokes?
Life. From Different Strokes? Well, Todd Bridges is still alive, yeah.
He's probably the only one.
Of the main people. Well, no, where it happened to Charlotte Ray or whatever, she dead?
Charlotte Ray's Facts of Life.
Yeah, she came from Different Strokes, though. She was their maid, yeah.
Oh.
Yep, it was a spinoff.
I don't remember. Is Charlotte Ray still alive? I'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know. Anyway.
I'm not even sure her name is Charlotte Ray. I just think that that's what her name is.
No, I think you're right. I stopped caring about 30 seconds ago. Anyway, this movie had odd futuristic technology that was seemingly far, far out of place.
Especially since most of the other technology was just like, especially the Nazis.
Yeah.
They weren't very sophisticated. Like, they didn't have special weapons. Well, no, they had brute force.
Flamethrowers and chains. But they had this lovely video cassette player that was fancy that played video, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they had magical force fields for the cells.
Well, you know. Depends on where you put your priorities in R&D.
I guess.
Yeah, all their resources went into tormenting apes.
And at one point, when one of them pulls off a cordless phone to use, and it's just a Princess Slimline phone with the end where the jack would go in taped up, I almost killed myself laughing. I mean, I give them kudos for being futuristically minded, but that was the cheapest of cheap props.
So on the just to advance the plot, because the plot isn't really all that sophisticated, you know,
nor important.
Well, no, I think it's important. Once we are introduced to this horrible world, and Caesar, who has been, you know, kept away from this world, sees how horrible it is and how unjust it is. There's a situation where one of the Nazi guys starts beating on an ape, and Caesar shouts, "Lousy human bastards!" followed by some comedy where the Nazis, because Ricardo Montalban says, no, that was me that said that. And they said, we don't believe you. Shout lousy human bastards at us.
See, comedy.
Yeah, it is kind of comedy where he has to yell lousy human bastards. Anyway, so the jig is up because, you know, of course, this is all foretold. There'll be a talking ape, the child of Zira and Cornelius, who then will lead the apes in a rebellion who will then destroy the world. It's interesting how the forces that be cling to this. Like, Dr. Heslein has really, really...
He's written the script for the rest of the movies.
Pretty much, yes. So they are now separated, and Armando suggests that Caesar hide out in some apes coming from Borneo. Now, was the idea that he was going to get sent away, or is the idea that he was going to go through ape control?
I thought he was going to get sent away to, what do they call it, outer provinces, right?
And that's where Armando would go find him when they traveled around.
Yeah, but unfortunately, he went straight to ape control, and Armando gets arrested.
I think he hopped in an in crate instead of an out crate.
Yeah, there we go. We also have, you know, we have the budding romance between, and the glances between Lisa, the ape, and Caesar. But eventually, the governor himself, Don Murray, Governor Breck, buys Caesar at auction, and he becomes one of the governor's apes because he does well on the tests that involved yes and no. Mm-hmm.
Et tu, Brute?
We also meet Governor Breck's chief aide, who is MacDonald, played by the wonderfully named Harry Rhodes from Sharky's Machine, Coma, Shock Corridor, and lots of civil rights activities. So he's sort of an ape sympathizer as an African-American man. Or maybe he's just more humane than his bosses. It's hard to tell. And then we meet Inspector Culp, played by Severin Darden, from The Day of the Dolphin, a movie we're going to talk about, Back to School and Real Genius, who suspects that this circus ape that Armando has been talking about is really foretold son of Zira and Cornelius.
Is he the same one in the next movie?
Yes.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
All right.
But for some inexplicable reason, rather than just using a different actor and keeping them the same name, they change it to the McDonald's brother in the next movie.
Yeah, oh, I think it's a different actor in the next movie.
It is a different actor.
Yeah, yeah.
But why you think the...
No, but the inspector is the same guy as in the next movie, though. Is the new governor in the next movie.
Yes.
Yeah. They reuse a lot of people. Same director.
No, but
is it the same character?
No.
I think it is, isn't it?
No. Nope.
Same name though, right?
Last name. It's his brother. They go into great detail to say that it's McDonald's brother.
No, we're not talking about McDonald, right? We're talking about Culp.
No, I'm talking about McDonald.
Okay, yeah.
No, Culp is the same guy.
Yes.
My point was that they lacked faith in their audience to have the sophistication to grasp that perhaps by using a different actor, you could still keep the same name and not confuse people.
They had problems with names in this movie. In these series point. Of movies.
Maybe they just didn't want to seem racist by throwing in another African-American actor and hoping people wouldn't notice.
Exactly. So we end up having Armando being put through an authenticator machine.
Another piece of amazing technology.
And rather than confessing, he jumps out a window to his death.
Which is pretty much confessing.
Yeah. And when Caesar learns of the death, that's when shit gets real. Because Caesar has now seen plenty of evidence of wrongdoing, and he has got hatred in his heart now. He is angry.
And turns out Caesar is a bad mofo.
Yes, he is. Plus, he's already been kind of organizing behind the humans' backs. So he is a very charismatic ape. And he starts...
Yes, because it's 100% nonverbal.
Yes. And he is all of a sudden teaching the combat arts to the apes who are planning a rebellion. And they're not kidding around. I mean, when, you know, maybe I bring too much of Hotel Rwanda to the situation, but you know, so a whole box of machetes is very scary to me. But they weren't satisfied with a whole box of machetes. They had some really wicked cutlery.
They weren't messing around.
No, they were like Black Panther-esque, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. You see Culp using the three-button indicator to alert that there's something going on. The same three-button indicator in the spaceship on the first movie, by the way.
Oh, the air is good, the air is bad, the air is button. There you have
it. No, it was the three push buttons, I think, to open the hatch or something.
Oh, okay.
One was red, one was green, one was yellow. It's the same thing. They just reused it. So a lot of the props got reused.
I think it's because the production company was consistent. Like, they had this Apes property, and the Apes property was very popular.
Well, also, it was done in a very short period of time, so...
Yes. Oh, yeah, like 5 movies in 6 years, I think?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's faster than the Fast and Furious movies.
Well, maybe they do. I was going to say, people don't go around and dress up like Paul Walker and Vin Diesel.
Yes, they do. Shows,
do they?
They dress their cars up like Vin Diesel's car and Paul Walker's car.
There's a whole subset of people living their lives 1/4 mile at a time.
Oh, it's all about family.
I have seen approximately 10 minutes of the first movie. And Derek, one of his friends, was watching it. And I actually left the house. I'm like, you know what? I got better stuff to do. I'll be back.
I saw some of the most recent movie. And... I'm a Jordana Brewster fan, but yeah, I haven't seen any of the other movies because, you know, it's just not my bag. I'm sure they're fine.
4, 5, and 6 are so good.
Yeah. We have Caesar getting arrested and tortured, and we have a bizarre execution scene.
It was nearly Star Trek-esque.
It was very Star Trek. Yeah, that's a good example, yes.
The electrocution?
Yes.
The whole sets. Actually, all the sets in this movie were very Star Trek sets.
But then when you see McDonald and Caesar rendezvous in the tunnels, you notice they're the same tunnels as the second movie. But that What's-His-Nuts was crawling through.
Oh, yeah. No, this is all, yeah, it's all reused. Then we have a full-on, like, ape riot.
Oh, it's a full revolution.
Yeah.
And it's like a revolution in a little revolution in Century City where it was all filmed.
And it's pretty brutal.
And it goes on for a long time.
That's what I'm saying. It did not need to go on as long as it did.
Oh, I think it made it effective, though.
Oh, it was very effective.
Did we all watch the same version
of the film? Or? Yeah, we're going to talk about the different endings, right?
Okay. I watched the unrated ending.
The version that Drew and I watched was where they tacked on the happier ending.
Yeah. That was not the movie I saw.
What's the happier ending?
The thing is, you know, Caesar makes that big speech about where there's fire, there's smoke, and there's smoke.
Caesar! This is not how it was to be. And you, oh my. Violence prolongs hate, hate prolongs violence. By what right are you spilling blood?
By the slave's right to punish his persecutors.
Caesar, I, a descendant of slaves, am asking you to show humanity.
But I was not born human.
I know. The child of the evolved apes.
Whose children shall rule the earth.
For better or for worse?
Do you think it could be worse?
Do you think this riot will win freedom for all your kind? By tomorrow...
By tomorrow it will be too late. Why, a tiny, mindless insect like the Emperor Moth can communicate with another over a distance of 80 miles.
An Emperor Ape might do slightly better?
Slightly? What you have seen here today, apes on the 5 continents will be imitating tomorrow.
With knives against guns, with kerosene cans against flamethrowers.
Where there is fire, there is smoke. And In that smoke, from this day forward, my people will crouch and conspire and plot and plan for the inevitable day of man's downfall, the day when he finally and self-destructively turns his weapons against his own kind, the day of the writing in the sky, when your cities lie buried under radioactive rubble, when the sea is a dead sea and the land is a wasteland, out of which I will lead my people from their captivity, and we shall build our own cities in which there will be no place for humans except to serve our ends, and we shall found our own armies, our own religion, our own dynasty, and that day is upon you now!
Yeah, that's where they ended it, right?
Multiple things. They ended it there, but they ended it with the apes killing the governor. That's how it was filmed. And not in a fun way. They murdered him by bashing his brains out. So, audiences didn't like that, and the studio didn't like that because they wanted to make money. So they made a reshoot, but they wanted to rush it out. So all they did was, that's why you only see Roddy McDowell's eyes, because they looped footage of his eyes as he just did a voiceover. And then they reversed the footage of the apes bashing the guns onto the governor so that it looked like they were pulling the guns back.
Yeah, because he has this whole speech where he says that, and then in our version of Dronizot, it's followed by Lisa, the ape, saying, no, and then Caesar saying, okay, but for now, put your weapons and hatred down.
That explains so much, because that was such a weird 180.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was tacked on specifically because test audiences did not like that Roddy McDowell told everybody to burn the fucking humans down.
Yeah. That was a studio push.
Ah, but that... I wish I'd seen that version, because that tone is consistent with the rest of the bleak, dark, horrible movie.
Yeah, because it is. I mean, the movie is all about Caesar getting angry. Angrier and angrier and angrier, and then you have this uprising.
You had the purge, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just had full on human killing rebellion.
Yeah, as the apes are pouring gasoline everywhere, I thought, wouldn't somebody smell all that gasoline being poured everywhere? Wouldn't you smell that?
Well, it's the 70s.
But you saw the first use of their nets, though.
Yes. I was so excited. I was like, ah, they were naturals.
So, Conquest. What's your verdict, brother? Or, I'm sorry, special features on Conquest?
I sent you that whole Ape Guevara picture, which I thought was hilarious, yes. By the way. I came up with that, and then I realized I better search the internet because somebody else clearly came up with it before me, but I was proud of myself for that one.
Oh, yeah.
I had to go with the obvious that there was guerrilla warfare tactics that made me laugh. Breck's savage beast speech, he wants to make apes great again. So apparently Roddy McDowell and Angela Lansbury were very close friends, and she talks about what a great sense of pride and accomplishment he felt by getting through these movies.
For just surviving?
That's what I couldn't tell. I'm like, it was one of those... Does she mean he really loved it because he was happy that he was a part of it, or was he just happy that he survived it because it was such a shitty experience? But what else was in there? So it was filmed in Century City. They meant to very clearly put that the human existence was now bleak, hence why most of the humans were colorless and the apes were the only ones that had color. The movie was supposed to have an implicit non-violence message.
Fail.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know how they accomplished that. The message was also to be that short-term will get you where you want, but long-term, it hurts your cause. And they're all related to the violence theme. Thought that they were going to get a G rating.
Yeah, this is the only PG?
So, well, yeah, but I think it originally had an R. And so
there were two straight minutes of apes stacking human bodies.
Well,
they thought they were going to get a G.
They thought they were going to get a G. They changed the version so that it appeared Caesar was more conciliatory. And then they reversed the camera angles, and that's how they got the rating that they got. They backed off from the R. So, yep, that's all the notes I have for Conquest.
So what's your verdict for Conquest on its own?
I don't know. I don't even know how to rate them anymore because it's. I'm gonna give it a C.
Well, don't. Okay, here. Let me try to be helpful, or maybe I'm just gonna jump in and mansplain or whatever. I guess it's not mansplain. Yeah, exactly. Is you can't watch this movie on its own.
No. Now, there's no there. Well, I mean,
you could. It's a dark movie.
You could watch it because Armando has a huge amount of exposition. So you would have enough foreshadowing and history from Armando's exposition.
Oh, I mean, you can successfully do it. I just wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. If this was the first one you watched, you'd be like, fuck, they made five of these? Holy crap.
Well, you have to admit, they're all pretty bleak.
As it turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all espousing the end of the world, so.
Yeah.
I mean, of course they're bleak.
I like that kind of story. Somehow that appeals to me. I had a whole internet conversation about, I said, you know, they were talking about, was it the United Nations of Horror, where I was asking about, what are the best and worst endings of horror movies? And they showed a picture of the ending of Planet of the Apes. And I suggested that I really liked Halloween 3 because the whole world dies at the end of that. And then I mentioned The Thing because it was kind of apocalyptic too and blah, blah, blah. And somebody said, everybody dies at the end of Halloween 3? I'm like, well, maybe because I read the novelization, but yeah, everybody dies. Unless it's like the poop knife and I'm the only one.
I don't know that Drew knows about the poop
knife. Do you
know
about the poop knife, Drew?
He doesn't do Facebook. Oh,
it's a great meme, and I don't care if it's true. It doesn't matter. It's a David Sedaris type story about a guy who is basically, I think it's...
They don't have enough fiber in the diets in his family. So basically their family, to quell the instances of the incredible toilet clogging that would happen, they had a specific knife for the purpose of helping to break down things so that things could move through the toilet easier when flushing. A single knife that was kept central to the three bathrooms of the house. A special knife solely for this purpose. And when he was at someone else's house and apparently decided to leave his non-fibrous husk of a turd in their toilet, asked if they had a poop knife ready for him, and they all said... What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. And he realized that perhaps something in his family was askew.
Well, that's the beauty of the story is he comes up and he says, excuse me, but where's your poop knife? I'm like, excuse me, what? Your poop knife. I need it. My what? Your poop, you know, the poop knife. And he had to explain, oh, no. So that is all very funny. But what's also very funny is because it's become kind of a meme. There are lots of people coming out of the closet confessing to having poop knives. And also, in one case, I think it's just like the Daily Mail or something, but this woman said, yeah, I was wondering why my husband had this like rusty knife in the bathroom, but I would use it to open like Amazon packages and whatever until I found out that that's his deuce cutter.
That is a great name.
Yeah. So anyway, A, I had no idea that people had poop knives. And B, I love the idea of, you know, to be the guy that, excuse me, where's your poop knife?
Yeah. What do you mean you don't have a snake? You must have a snake. I got a snake to drain. Yeah. What? Doesn't everybody have a snake? My dad had a snake. Anytime there was a problem at our house, he could snake it all the way to the street.
You're kidding. What's your problem? We had an upstairs snake and a downstairs snake.
It's not even a euphemism.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think all families have some things that are unique to their family. And because I've certainly had realizations when I was at friend's house, like, no, my family has some things that are not quite like this family or vice versa. So when I read The Poop Knife, I was crying.
It was so funny.
It was funny, but also I don't think it's fake. I think it was true.
No, it has the ring of truth about it. But it's kind of like David Sedaris story. It may not be exactly true.
It's true enough though that it's probably true, and enough people are talking about it, like, oh, and similar things though. The similar things are what's more horrifying to read.
Oh, I haven't read it because
whether or not any of that's true, I had to stop. You read the comments or the responses. Oh, yeah, no. I pulled the ripcord. I'm like, no, I can't read this. I gotta sleep. You know, this is nightmare fuel. Mm-mm. You know about. Oh, my dad had a pee jar, and because he was too lazy to go upstairs and pee, and he would just leave the jars out, and then eventually my mom would come and wash them out, and we'd reuse them.
Oh yeah, no, that those things behind my dad's recliner, those are spit wads. What? No, just yeah, don't worry about it.
Nothing to see. Move along.
Little
here.
Pieces of wax and some straws, and yeah, just no. Anyway, so Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, This is a good movie. I think it's among the best of this five. Yeah, I'm realizing more and more that the first iconic movie is maybe the most irrelevant. But yeah, this is it's a really miserable, uncomfortable movie to watch. But I think in that is ambition that I admire. I mean, it really this movie took a stance. I mean, it had a vision and it went for it, and it was dark. And I don't want to watch it again, but when I think about it, I think about it in positive terms. I mean, I like what they did. It looks like they had almost no money, but they still made it work. Even though the non-verbal planning was a little silly, it was really eerie.
How
to
ineffective,
watch.
Yeah.
I
still think Roddy McDowall is fantastic. And all the main actors, they're taking it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, like the previous movie, Escape, I mean, that movie had that turn in it where it was all light and goofy, and then it went really dark and heavy. This movie, there's no turn. It just goes for it from the very beginning and carries it all the way through. And thankfully, it's not very long. But yeah, I didn't enjoy it, but I think it's a good movie.
But you can see where if they ended it with just his, burn them down speech without that relief at the end.
Oh, that'd be so much better.
Oh, it would be, but it would be a different feeling you had after watching it.
Yeah, no, by the end of it, I was like, Jesus, fuck, this movie is just, God.
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction. Yeah.
So, okay, so on to, from the sublime to maybe the ridiculous.
Wait, what did you think about the movie?
Oh, I liked it. By the time I got to this movie, because, that turn in Escape, I really liked it, but I was really sort of surprised about it. So when this movie was dark, 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 I thought, wow, it's great. But yeah, it's uncomfortable. It's not something I want to watch all the time, but I just really admired that, especially since they had the cheapo Star Trek sets and the Q flamethrowers. But yeah, I mean, I like the fact that they had the statue of Rover and Cuddles or whatever the kitty was called, maybe just Kitty, because they held on to their world building. I like that. But then we get to Battle for the Planet of the Apes, 1973.
Yeah, if you thought Conquest was too dark, at least the next movie is like an episode of the A-Team.
I thought Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I felt about it. It had the same tone. I mean, good and bad. It just didn't have any gravity to this movie.
I almost didn't get through the first part of this movie. I was so angry at it. Because the whole recap was just get to the movie. You know what? If you haven't seen the rest of them, that's too bad. Maybe you need to go back and watch them. But the long open was just nuts.
Well, they had John Huston for a couple of days, so they figured they were going to have him talk. And we have And maybe it's because it's Claude Akins who plays Aldo, who's now the militant bad guerrilla general.
You think his part was written up some, perhaps?
Well, he played Sheriff Lobo from BJ and the Bear, and he was in every television Western ever. He was in every television show of my childhood, I think, at one point or another. So I can't take him. I mean, even, okay, so Senator Islin was the politician general ape from, Beneath. But Claude Akins is Claude Akins. He's only so threatening. I mean, he's not super threatening. I
wanted him to die.
Well, I think the ape in the television show, the gorilla in the television show, who was the big bad guy, was way more scary, if I remember correctly. And I don't really want to go watch a television show, to be honest, because apparently it gets pretty bad pretty fast. But I know what they're doing, but yeah, just
well, and so the story was that the writer got sick and he wasn't able to write the movie. And so they hired a married couple to write the movie. And I think perhaps, well, not perhaps, I know they very clearly put their social commentary into it. So this movie just, I had some real problems, especially with the abbreviated jump in intellect in the level of the primates.
It made no sense.
No, it didn't make any sense.
The problem is, it's trying to call back everything.
Well, you also have this giant radionuclear apocalypse that's just over the hill, by the way. So it's magically just over the hill, but doesn't kill anything near the ape village. So there's that, but turns out that where the apocalypse happened, they have the big Alpha Omega missile left.
Yeah, this movie was really hamstrung, trying to tie up all the loose ends and make everything connect.
Yeah, I think that, and they wanted to use every set they had left on the lot.
It's actually told in flashback, because the lawgiver is talking to a whole group of apes, like, what, hundreds of years or 1,000 years or whatever after this happened. And it's all talking about how, you know, the great ape leader Caesar, played by Roddy McDowall again. So after the revolution, there was some sort of nuclear holocaust. And Caesar is now head of Ape City and trying to, you know, develop his civilization. And we have the back and forth between the
they're really generous with the term city.
Well, and also Caesar,
the camp.
Yeah, well, Caesar comes off.
It was like Jonestown.
I mean, this is a guy who arranged to have enough machetes for all of the humans to be killed, and yet he's the pacifist leader guy, kind of. So that's a little bit of a turn.
Yes,
and we've got Claude Akins, who is, again, I mean, he's supposed to be the big, like, bad militant ape guy, but he's more of like a buffoon.
He's just an idiot.
Baboon.
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
So
he is Brutus. He is Brutus to Caesar, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Not subtle at all.
No, not subtle at all.
No. Also, so they learn speech and intellect, but not impulse control. And yet, they have Paul Williams.
It's the last thing you learn, to be fair.
And they have Paul Williams exchanging the theory of relativity.
Paul Williams was also an odd choice, although he looks great in his makeup.
Oh, he does.
I mean, he looks fantastic as an orangutan.
I thought Aldo looked pretty good in his gorilla makeup.
Yeah, not bad. Mm. You know, they had the advantage of this is the fifth movie, so they had the makeup pretty well down. And it didn't take them nearly as long to apply it either. But we've got Lisa, who comes back and is now married, and they have a child named Cornelius. Because we recycle our names a lot. He's played
But by... Lisa magically can talk now.
Well,
fully.
She's of course.
Fully flowing speech.
It's been a couple of years. She's got the Rosetta Stone tapes and everything. So Cornelius is played by
phonics.
Cornelius is played by Bobby Porter, who later was a famous, or not famous, he was a successful Hollywood stuntman, appearing in movies like Flatliners and Terminator 2.
Nice. Did he die?
No, he's still alive.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. And the way you were working up to that, I was like, and he died in an accident.
No, I think he doesn't have many acting credits anymore. More, they're mostly stunt credits, but I hope he's still alive. He's probably crippled?
If he's a stunt, if he's doing stunts,
well, okay,
it's a hard life.
Let's say he's a successful stuntman. I mean,
he fell out of a tree pretty hard.
Well, we're going to talk about a tree.
Yeah. So, why was it necessary to tell Caesar of these magical tapes of his mother and father?
Because it's a way to advance the plot.
It's the MacGuffin.
Yeah, 100% MacGuffin.
So stupid. We have this leader who's building an army, and he needs to see his parents.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, other McDonald.
Exactly. Yeah. Played by Austin Stoker from Assault on Precinct 13. That's for John Carpenter fans. Yeah. So they determine, they learn that, oh yeah, he can learn from the future from these tapes of his parents.
And he can learn his future from tapes of the past.
Well, and I wonder if they're tapes of his parents being like tortured. Seems problematic, but oh well.
I had a hard time finding any suspense in this movie, knowing that some of the ape community would have had to have survived in order for them to have made it to the future to send the future back to the past.
Well, and I've got, yeah. See, that's the thing.
It's that whole future paradox crap. So it was a struggle to get through this movie for me anyway.
Well, along the way, we meet the orangutan Mandemus, played by Lou Ayers, who is the keeper of the weapons. And you have to answer riddles or whatever. And then you have
Virgil. I didn't realize we were watching like a Shrek movie.
Well, and then you have Virgil, played by Paul Williams, from Phantom of the Paradise, a movie that we'll have to watch at some point. Are you familiar with Phantom of the Paradise, Jason? Drew? Anybody? No?
Nope.
Okay.
I just know Paul Williams from, you know, just an old-fashioned love song.
Well, also Rainbow Connection.
Oh, God, that's right.
Yeah, he wrote a ton of songs.
He did. He's also on the Love Boat.
Oh, he's actually a very, very accomplished prominent musician, yeah. But it's Phantom of the Paradise is like a Phantom of the Opera, but sort of a rock opera kind of thing, and Paul Williams is the Phantom.
Wait, wasn't Phantom of the Opera already a rock opera?
No, it was a... Wasn't Family... No, Family Opera has been a movie since 1920s. And a book before.
Yeah, but...
Yeah. No, this was before the Family Opera that you were familiar with.
No, I know. The web... Yeah, I get that. I'm just...
Yeah. Sorry,
I was being flip.
It's a campy movie that will probably not hold the test of time, but may be interesting to talk about at some point.
You're telling me that Paul Williams was in a campy movie?
I know, it's crazy. I'm going to argue, though, that Paul Williams is one of the best parts of this movie that we're talking about now, though.
My problem was I kept seeing Truman Capote.
Low bar.
I kept seeing Truman Capote from Murder by Death in Paul Williams.
Yeah, there's the... Okay, yeah.
Oh, I wish you had told me that before I started the movie.
Truman Capote would have been a great orangutan in that society.
Perhaps the pinky thing would have been a little disconcerting, but...
So there we end up going back to meet the humans, and we sneak into, it's basically like, I don't know, kind of maybe either Fallout 3 or maybe,
Jesse said Fallout 3.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the mission, you know, that you're going on.
I thought Fallout 3 was good.
I like Fallout 3 a lot. No, I love Fallout 3.
They didn't really have power, but amazingly, there was apparently water pressure.
It was all over the place.
And they didn't have power, but they had sensors and video monitors.
And all the humans look like they're like they belonged on the set of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Good reference.
I mean, that's what it looked like to me. Even the camera angles. Of Governor Culp.
Really what you're seeing is the, you know, the mad mutants.
I guess. So,
well, you're seeing the mad mutants that are the pre-mutants from Beneath.
True.
Which is where the Alpha Omega ends up starting from.
Yeah, that's ending up. That's the thing, is that so while we have Caesar going in his quest for the MacGuffin, and then back at Ape City, I hate it. I hate it so much that it's called Ape City. We have Aldo planning on insurrection or mutiny or whatever it's called. Revolt.
Mutiny, for sure.
Yeah. Mutiny. So then we have the Governor Culp decides what. Now, what exactly is this? Why does he decide to go and kill all the apes? Like, presumably Vengeance. He knows apes are around, right?
No.
No.
They had no idea where they were, right over the hill.
Okay. Yeah.
They had to follow them back
okay.
to figure out where Ape City was.
Yeah, they were complacent to wallow in their own demise, tinkering away. But they were so in themselves that they put security equipment in case they got invaded. So what were they protecting invasion from?
And they were comfortable enough to make everyone matching capes.
Well, and they also had all the Fury Road vehicles they could use to make their little trek over the hill.
No. They had, like, the fan edit version of Fury Road.
Well, okay, yes.
Like, that's a line in the movie. Hey, make sure the school bus is still working.
Yeah.
We won't even talk about the fact that Corp is actually grabbing the barrel of the gun as it's firing, as if it wouldn't be blisteringly hot.
That's what bothered you?
Oh, no. That's not the only thing that bothered me. I'm just saying.
Oh.
And I couldn't place the Asian woman. She was so familiar to me, and I couldn't remember what other movies I've seen her in. The voice is what did it. Like, I've heard her in something else, and I could not place it. It was like a Star Trek movie or something of that. I never did. I couldn't find it. I found her. I know who she is, and I've seen, I mean, she's been in a ton of stuff I've seen, but nothing that rings the bell in my brain of what I remember. I can remember seeing her mannerisms and hearing her voice, but I can't remember the specific part. That's what happens in my old age, apparently.
Well, okay, so this whole thing plays out where we have the mutants doing their Mad Max thing, or Fury Road thing, or whatever, to go and attack the apes in Ape City. And in Ape City, there's the Julius Caesar Brutus thing going on. Although, I don't know about you, but I was a little bit disappointed in the main fight between Caesar and Aldo, just as a tree climbing contest. I mean, I get, you know, again, maybe
you mean Cornelius?
No. Well, Cornelius fell out of the tree because Aldo tried.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You skipped to the end.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. The whole thing about, Aldo and his guys are plotting Caesar's demise, and Cornelius has climbed a tree because he's an ape and hears this. And so.
And boyfriend Jesse says at this point, he jumped all the way there in the trees to get there. He couldn't jump to get back.
Well, again, to me, this is Little House on the Prairie. Yeah. Well, I was thinking Almanzo. Wasn't he the blind guy?
Maybe. Was that Mary's husband?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. You may be right.
Drew is like, nope.
Drew doesn't, he has no recollection.
I have a very limited memory. There was like a really terrifying episode, right, of Little House on the Prairie?
The Halloween episode.
Yeah. I did not care for that show.
Yeah. Well, it was either in our family, it was either that or the Waltons. And believe it or not, the Waltons was too preachy for us.
Yeah, we never watched the Waltons. That's true.
It was too preachy. Although when you watch Little House on the Prairie in reruns, it's a pretty preachy too. I mean, like as far as like religious preachy. But, you know, Michael Landon is much more charismatic than any of the Waltons.
Michael Landon and what's his face? Merle.
I have vivid memory. I grew up with Little House on the Prairie. That's
Oh, me too. No,
apparently the Nellie Olson's book that she put out last year, the year before, is really fascinating reading. Fun stuff. Because, you know, she was a young girl who played like an evil character. People hated her in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so. She was a blonde one with the curls?
Yes.
Yes, and her horrible, terrible...
She was terrible.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah. People were like... In these days, somebody would have actually, like, fragged her or something.
Oh, sorry. Victor French is who I was going for.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Oh, Victor French and Merlin Olsen.
Yes. Yes.
Because Merlin Olsen played an Amish dude in another movie, right? Or other movies.
He was father or somebody or other. Or...
He had a TV show, yeah, right?
Father Murphy, maybe?
He was Aaron's Way. He was Father Murphy in a TV series, but also he was the Amish guy in Aaron's Way, I believe. Huh. Oh, this was the 80s. Oh. So, Aaron's Way... Aaron Miller finds out his oldest son Noah was killed in a surfing accident in California. Noah was living there at a winery with his girlfriend Susanna Loverde, who is pregnant. Aaron attends the funeral and finds out about the baby. He then decides to move his Amish family from Pennsylvania to California to help Susanna with the winery and the baby. This means a lot of adjusting for both families and the Millers when they move in with Susanna.
Who plays Susanna?
One moment.
Nell Carter.
Kathleen York.
Okay.
Samantha Mathis.
Samantha Mathis isn't there? From Pump Up the Volume?
Yeah. Now Eric's excited.
Yeah, I am. You've got my attention.
Yeah.
Hold on. Is Jordana Brewster in that too?
Anyway, sorry for the trip down memory lane.
No, it's okay. No, actually, that's
my synapses misfired.
That's
going to
be the best part of this movie is talking about other things. Because
amen to that.
At this point, it's not subtle. It's really silly. We've got and the very beginning, and this is something that Jimmy Pardo quotes a lot. So, and I listen to him twice a week. So, he talks about ape must never kill ape. That's this movie. Of all the movies, that's this movie. Ape must never kill ape. Also, don't tell a ape no. And don't call them a monkey. We've learned this all through these things. It makes sense. So, yeah. We have Aldo, who puts all the humans in a pen. And we've got this ape fighting ape. And we have... Cornelius wasn't killed, was he?
Yes.
Yeah,
he dies.
Okay, he died. Okay. So,
I mean, it takes a long time.
Caesar wasn't around. It's nearly Game of Thrones-esque, except that was better. So they have the big onslaught of the humans. Why didn't anybody think to shoot out the tires or maybe the engines?
This is the A-team. This is a lot of like needless explosions and people flying here and there on trampolines.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just, they clearly don't have, for all the intellect of theory of relativity, they clearly do not have any warfare knowledge.
Well, Caesar does.
He doesn't share it.
He tells them all to lie down.
See, I thought that was Jonestown.
Yeah, this was rough. But
with them laying down, you get to see more use of the nets.
Well, because they're basically playing possum, or whatever the possum version of apes are. And, so let's fight like apes, blah, blah, blah.
Aldo murders a bus.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, there are no survivors. They don't take prisoners. Except for, of course, the humans that are living in their compound. So Aldo returns from battle where they kill all the mutants in the Christopher McCandless bus, and and Aldo wants to kill all of the remaining humans in the pen, but Caesar shields them because they're not.
Jason doesn't like that one.
So you like Christopher McCandless?
Yeah. Sorry. Do go on.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so that's where we have this, the final confrontation between Aldo and Caesar, where they climb a tree. Come on, this is the worst. The worst, the worst, the worst.
Well, at least all the apes didn't stand around Aldo and bash his head in with guns.
Oh, that would have been fine. Compared to watching two grown apes climb a tree.
Well, and then you don't even have the satisfaction of Caesar killing him.
Oh no, it's just the worst.
It's the most inglorious of deaths.
Yeah.
As the Klingons would say, he died without honor.
Well, also, I mean, it is, you know, if this is more of a children's movie, it does outline the peril, the risks of tree climbing. But that's about all that I give it. It's not great. I don't like.
Actually,
it.
You're right. You're right. Two tree climbers, two deaths.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good.
I guess technically three, two deaths.
Okay. McDonald is now the ringleader of the humans, who I think he's threatening not to come out of his pen. It's not really a pro move.
Yeah. So he's like, okay, you guys can come out now. He's like, no, not until you promise to be nice to us.
Exactly. We'll stay in our cage. We'll show you.
Yeah. I was like, oh, fuck. Just kill him.
And that's the part of the movie that I don't understand.
That's the part you don't understand?
Well, it doesn't go along with the timeline. Like, if there was, I mean, and I don't know what you do with the humans. The humans, again, are the worst part of any of these movies.
So this was the problem with the story being rewritten by somebody who didn't know the story. Because the original story had Caesar subjecting the humans to surgery to eliminate their ability to speak.
That would be the way to go. That ties it all up.
Yep.
Yeah. That was left out.
Yeah. And I can understand why it was left out. But I think they did that kind of crap in the TV show. I remember brain surgery happening in the TV show and one of the main characters dying. It could have been a fever dream involving Eric Estrada and chickens, but...
7 Mary 3.
So, I was thinking about... not really, but I was amusing to myself about doing a podcast where we all watched an episode of Dukes of Hazzard and discussed how... inappropriate it was every single week for however long the run is.
Don't even need to watch it to tell you how inappropriate it was.
I mean, they're just, you know, seen in 2017, the General Lee and the Confederate flag, but also the fact that they've been in trouble with the law since the day they were born. So they were actually probably criminals, and maybe the town is corrupt and whatever, but you know, and the whole cooter always disturbed me. Anyway.
No, because then that's going to inevitably lead up to having to watch that god-awful Jessica Simpson, Johnny Knoxville remake movie. No,
turns out it won't. I tried to watch that for about 10 minutes.
Huh.
And I was done.
Behold my shock and amazement.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm thinking of Starsky and Hutch. Or maybe I'm thinking of both.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, so I know we're yada-yadding this movie, but anything else you want to add? It fails. If it had done the brain surgery thing, it would have tied it up.
Yeah, no, again, the writing in this was crap. So this was the story of Cain and Abel, but also bringing in history of the Vietnamese conflict and trying to bring in some kind of moral vision with the vision also of the possibility to alter the future. i.e. civil rights, and a chance for reformation and reconciliation.
Nope.
Yeah.
Too little, too late.
And it ends with, like, two people, were they playing chess or were they playing checkers? They're playing some sort of board game deciding whether or not to destroy the world.
Well, yeah. Oh, the mutants, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that I guess the mutants are the people that that end up being, because I think in if looking at the notes of it, it talks about the House of Mendez, and Mendez was one of the people, one of the mutants left. It was the girl and then Mendez together, and they became the telepathic mutants from the rest of it, whatever.
And they had to move the missile from California to New York.
It was California. I don't know. It's problematic.
But clearly they didn't launch the missile, or the missile wouldn't have existed in the second movie.
Exactly.
Which was 2,000 years in the future.
Yes.
Well, no, he talked her out of firing off the missile with the compelling argument of, do you really?
Well, by the way, that's the most true thing of the movie.
He stopped her with his beautiful eyes.
Yeah, it's like, you know, okay, well, dude, there's no one here to tell us that we really, you know, we've got a mission, but everybody's gone. So, hey, it's you and me. Just chill out for a while. No need to push the button. It's fine. And also, the final shot shows the statue of, is the statue of Caesar as the lawgiver?
Wait, I had a question about this. I didn't understand. Was the statue crying?
That's the thing.
Or did they make a statue of Caesar crying?
I don't know. I think it's implied that the single tear is, I don't know. Good question.
Like, is the statue suffering from some sort of stigmata?
Well, is Caesar the guy from the Don't Litter ads?
Is Caesar actually trapped within the statue, and the only way he can communicate is to squeeze out a single tear?
Yes, until a prince comes and kisses him. Yeah.
Or maybe it's Corbomite, and he's waiting to be thawed
out. Could be, yeah.
Ah, Java Solo.
Wait, Carbonite?
Sorry,
what did you say? Kryptonite?
Carbomite.
That's actually James Corden. It's Cordonite.
That would be better.
Yeah. I like
James Corden very much.
It's Corbinite. It's Corbin Burnson.
Corbin. Oh, I was going to go with Corbin Dallas. Multipass.
There you go.
I forget which one it was, but one of his carpool karaoke's, he actually talks about how when he came over to America, he discovered like how many Americans think he's gay.
Yeah. Everybody. I still think so.
Yeah. He talked about how anytime he was out with his wife and he would introduce people to his wife, the reaction always like, oh, huh.
That's funny. Well, you know, the age old game of British or gay.
Yeah. Sometimes it's the same.
Yeah.
His book's really good, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure. He seems to be a pretty talented guy.
He's great. He's fantastic.
I actually heard, again, another Jimmy Pardo thing. I heard on today's episode, they were talking about actually a quote of his. And the quote was that, you know, he meets actors and he said, some actors are like, their performance is so human. And other actors, their performance is completely alien. Like, the topic of the conversation was whether Jessica Chastain was a good actor or not. And they weren't sure. They're like, you know, and this is not James Corden's conversation. This is the Jimmy Pardo gang conversation. It's like, she's so stiff and weird that is that because she's a stiff and weird actor, or is that part of her acting? And then they talked about, what, you know, like Meryl Streep apparently has the capability of being both warm and alien. If that makes any sense. So, final thoughts on let's just do the whole series, the original series.
you're just gonna shit can the last movie?
No, maybe. Okay, well, how about Beneath then? Or, I'm sorry, Battle 4. What are your final thoughts on Battle 4? Brother Jay, your verdict.
Don't even waste your time.
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
No.
Okay, I will argue that if you've gone for 4, go for the 5th.
No, don't waste any more time.
No.
If nothing else,
no.
I want you, the listener, to see Paul Williams and Claude Akins all dressed up in their monkey suits. And then maybe fast forward through most of it.
You know what would have been made this movie better? The actual music group, the Monkees, in here. That would have been a better cameo.
You know, his mom invented Whiteout, right? So now let's talk just a quick wrap-up of the entire original Planet of the Apes series. Your experience, we won't blame anybody, boyfriend Jesse, but...
Oh, hell, I'm absolutely blaming him. He's getting punished for this.
Okay.
He's going to be in movie jail.
Granted, we have four more Planet of the Apes movies to watch here, although we're not going to watch them all in a row. We're going to give it a little bit of a break. But
they will have to be better than this.
I don't know. I don't want to spoil anything, but...
Have you watched The Head at all, Eric?
I watched the Mark Wahlberg movie. And I have thoughts, but I won't share them. I have not watched any of the Andy Serkis movies. But yeah, so Brother Jay... You took the deep dive. Five original Planet of the Apes movies. What do you think?
In five movies in 3 weeks, by the way.
Yeah, and you own the collection now forever.
So I can go back and rewatch it in some senile moment of self-torture.
Pick a holiday like you do for Christmas or Thanksgiving. Or I guess it's Christmas you watch Bond movies?
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, okay. So pick another movie or pick another a holiday.
Well, the bad news is I'm out of Bond movies now, so I don't have any Bond movies. So, like I said, I think we watched Twilight Zone this year and something else.
Well,
I can't even remember what we watched now. But
you can always go back to Bond.
Well,
after watching them all for the podcast, though, I can understand why you'd want a year or two off.
I watch them anyway. I'm an unashamed Bond fan regardless.
But are you a Planet of the Apes fan?
No.
Fair enough. Drew, are you a Planet of the Apes fan?
Sorry.
I'll let you defend yourself.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm glad I watched the first movie so that I could have that piece of iconography in my brain. And I can have that as a reference, as a cultural reference, at very least. But the further we got in the progression of the movies, the less I felt like my time was being spent worthwhile. So that was my problem with it is it wasn't, I didn't get much from watching them, and it just lessened the experience of having seen the first one. So.
Well, okay. Let me argue, at least from my perspective, Planet of the Apes, the original movie with Charlton Heston and everything, is kind of like required viewing. Film appreciation, at least science fiction appreciation, whatever. It's kind of like required viewing. The second movie is ridiculous and not worth it. The third movie I really liked. That whole turn made it very interesting to me. The fourth movie I liked because it was kind of dark and it really had an anger about it that I thought was really interesting. And Roddy McDowall got the best, probably his, again, the best of his nonverbal acting. And then the last movie was just like a money grab, piece of crap. Should have been an episode of Little House on the Prairie. So I would recommend 1 for context, 3 and 4. Just me. So Drew?
I would actually agree with that. I feel a sense of accomplishment now that I've watched all 5. I mentioned before I had ambitions to do it a long time ago. 25 years ago, and after the second movie I couldn't go on. I think that was a mistake, because the third movie is bonkers but worth it. I mean, it's, that movie will give you whiplash. It'll flip you for real. And the fourth movie is so dark and disturbing that it's worth it. And that speech at the end, the one that should have been the final speech, is great. And as good as Roddy McDowall did with that, I want to see that speech redone by like Andre Brower. I think he'd kill it. The fifth movie is
Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott would be good too. The fifth movie is a travesty. It really is. It didn't make any sense. It had no budget. It looked terrible. Jason, you said that it actually had a higher budget than Conquest?
Barely.
I don't know where they spent it.
Well, and it may have just been inflation. You know, because the time wasn't exactly a robust time in the economy. But Conquest was budgeted $1.6 million. Battle got $1.8 million, which really isn't a lot of difference. And that may have been simply makeup costs, because there was more... I don't know, because they did a lot of fakery in the fourth movie, in Conquest, for the makeup and the costumes and the outfits to have all the volume.
All those jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was not lost on me, that they... Jumpsuits cover a lot of makeup flaws.
Well, and a lot of the patterns were just painted on.
Oh, yeah, instead of being, like, embossed leather.
Right, and they used garden gloves sewn into long-sleeve shirts, and they'd paint those, and they reused a lot. Like, Aldo's outfit was a Roman centurion's outfit from another movie, so they repurposed a lot of stuff. And the contention of one of the, I'm not sure if it was one of the producers or somebody in the crew said, had they actually given the budget in the battle to the movie, if they had given the budget to battle what the original producers wanted, they would have probably had been able to produce a much better product. But they were hamstrung by the studio just wanting to wring money out of it.
Well, the movie you described as like the first draft sounds so much better.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's another movie, Secret of the Planet of the Apes, too, that was supposed to follow, maybe, I think Cornelius is supposed to survive, and it would follow Cornelius and some other ape, and, or maybe a, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what the, but of course it went to development hell, and. But like Mego, who made the characters, like I had the Mego Star Wars characters when I was, or sorry, the Mego Star Trek characters when I was a kid. And they also made Planet of the Apes characters, and they had this couple, and of course I can't remember their names offhand, but there's a whole documentary about this couple who went out as Cornelius and Zira and made public appearances, and they would go to like circuses and all these things and put on like fighting demonstrations and all these other things, and like basically be seen with the apes, like get your picture taken with Cornelius and Zira. And they made a living for like 20 years. I think maybe the guy still goes to conventions and talks about makeup techniques and things.
Well, he should. The makeup is amazing in these movies.
Yeah, great. It really is. And, I guess maybe I have a fondness for, you know, the nostalgia, even though, again, it's mostly, I think, for the TV show, because I don't remember seeing the movies themselves as much. But I loved all the figures and stuff. And, you know, I love the iconic, like leather vests that go over the colored things. I mean, it's just kind of fun stuff. Yeah, so tip of the hat to boyfriend Jesse for suggesting that we watch Planet of the Apes.
No tipping of the hat. He's going to be punished.
Yeah. Well, when we watch the new ones, I'm interested, because it's definitely going to be a comparison.
That's what he wants to watch.
Yeah.
Well, this, so he hadn't great bargain for me forcing him to watch the last five.
But now he's seen them all, right?
Yes.
Okay. So now
has he seen the Marky Mark one?
I think he's seen all of the new ones.
Well, there's that Marky Mark one that's in the middle that's neither new nor old.
Well, we will find out shortly. But I kept poking him like, you're staying awake for this entire movie. You're not falling asleep for any of this.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.